Thank you, Adnan. He is one of the brothers in the trio, Gibran, the Palestinian trio. Global headlines right now are dominated by Russia's possibly imminent invasion of the Ukraine. And the U.S. and the EU really can do little to stop it if that's what Putin wants to do. Secretary of State Antony Blinken offered up this statement, quote, "One country does not have the right to dictate the policies of another or to tell that country with whom it may associate. One country does not have the right to exert a sphere of influence. That notion should be relegated to the dustbin of history," unquote. What utter hypocrisy from Secretary of State Antony Blinken. As Peter Beinart pointed out in a very recent New York Times op-ed, January 13th, "When will the U.S. stop lying to itself about global politics?" That's the name of the op-ed. It's linked at the Gaza Corner section of tonight's playlist at tangents.com. And Peter Beinart wrote, quote, "It's a noble principle, just not one the United States abides by. The United States has exercised a sphere of influence in its own hemisphere for almost 200 years, unquote. Chances are you took U.S. History 101 and you learned about the Monroe Doctrine. So, case closed. Ukraine shares a long border with Russia. Mexico shares a long border with the United States. What do you think President Biden would do if Mexico decided to flirt with Russia as a new geopolitical ally? Or ask Cuba what it's been like? Or why do you think the U.S. has been trying to commit regime change in Venezuela? There is a lot of geopolitical hypocrisy in the air, and especially that statement from Antony Blinken. I bring this up because it's the four-year anniversary of a four-year anniversary of a NATO country that invaded a sovereign state with a green light from Russia, which controlled the airspace, as the United States watched feebly from the sidelines. And the United States had a hell of a lot more leverage to stop that invasion than what it's facing now in the Ukraine. You know what invasion I'm talking about? Any guesses? It's a powerful NATO country that not only invaded 4 years ago another country, but to this day illegally occupies the territory that it conquered. And not only occupies the territory, but also completely altered the ethnic demographics of the region, which I and many would call a crime against humanity. And then, fast forward to October 2019, this NATO country, which I'll tell you in a moment, invaded again. The same country, but a little further to the east, where the United States controlled the airspace. But this act of war by Turkey, invading a sovereign country, was approved wholeheartedly by the U.S. president of the time, Donald Trump. So Donald Trump gave a thumbs up for a NATO country to commit an act of war. And that NATO country is Turkey. Now, you know, we all know, Trump was, is, forever will be clueless about about that region of the world. But he okayed it because he had a man crush on Turkey's President Erdogan. He just loved the way he was so autocratic. So he greenlighted the invasion of Syria. So Turkey illegally occupies a large swath of Syrian territory that had been part of the autonomous region of Syria called Rojava. And it's administered by Syrian Kurds. Rojava is a revolutionary form of governance. It's self-governance. It's grassroots democracy. And what really makes it different is it prioritizes women's empowerment in all aspects of life. And this is all the more remarkable because this is a region of the world which is predominantly patriarchal, authoritarian, and conservative. So 4 years ago, almost to the day, January 20th, last, you know, 2 days ago, January 20th, 4 years prior, Afrin was targeted by Turkey. Afrin was one of the three cantons in Rojava, and it's located in northwestern Syria. It borders on Turkey. But Turkey attacked it not because it was a military threat, and not all the BS about there are terrorists there, because that's the excuse every country uses. And it's not true in this case at all. But it was targeted because it was part of Rojava. Turkey does not want a successful democratic experiment championing women's rights to inspire the Kurds in its own country. So Turkey's objective is really to obliterate Kurdish culture. Syria's war was raging at the time, January 2018. But Afrin was one of the few places in Syria that was relatively safe. And many internally displaced Syrians fled to Afrin and were welcomed. And they found safety there. It's also, I'm going to say was, one of the most beautiful regions in Syria. It's famous for its olive oil, many forests of olive trees. But that all changed in January 20th, 2018, with Turkey's act of war with the sickening and ironic name Operation Olive Branch. Just 3 months later, March 24th, 2020, Turkish forces and its extremist mercenary surrogates took over all of Afrin. This Operation Olive Branch killed almost 1,600 Syrian Kurds, including about 400 civilians, including 55 children, and resulted in the displacement of hundreds of thousands of mostly Kurdish civilians, according to data by the Syrian Observatory of Human Rights. There has been an open campaign of ethnic cleansing targeting Kurds and Yazidis who had coexisted peacefully and safely in Afrin under the Rojava Autonomous Administration since 2012. It was about a year into the Syrian war. The Kurds accounted for about 90% of the total population before this Turkish onslaught and occupation. After this demographic shift of ethnic cleansing caused by ethnic cleansing, the Kurds make up now only about 20%, 90% plus to about 20%. Interestingly, I learned today that ethnic cleansing has not been defined and is not recognized as a crime under international law, according to the United Nations. But the lines between ethnic cleansing and genocide are blurry. James Silk, a human rights professor at Yale Law School, stated, quote, "Your motivation may be that you want the people out, but if in doing that you intend to destroy the group, then it's also genocide," unquote. Turkey's ongoing occupation of Afrin goes beyond killing and goes beyond ethnic cleansing. Since Turkey took control in March of 2018, Syrian Kurds in Afrin have faced arbitrary detentions, torture, sexual violations, property theft, extrajudicial killings, and gender-based violence. There is also systemic femicide in Afrin, which is sadly no surprise. It's no surprise because femicide is a huge problem in Turkey itself. According to the Afrin Human Rights Organization, at least 84 women have been killed in Afrin since March of 2018. 71 women have been sexually assaulted. In that same period, 6 women committed suicide. Over 1,000 women were reportedly abducted by Turkish-backed local armed groups, and the fate of most of the women remains unknown. Young girls have been kidnapped and tortured. Roshin Hido, a member of the Syrian Afrin Human Rights Organization, said, quote, "Crimes against humanity have been carried out systematically against Kurds and women in Afrin, in line with the orders of Turkish intelligence. Women who were subjected to torture tell us that Turkish intelligence was also present in their interrogation process. Most of the kidnapped women are subjected to sexual assault." Mizgin Hessen, a member of the Center for Research and Protection of Women's Rights in Syria, said, quote, "We are trying to convey the voices of women living in these regions to the world and also to relevant organizations. Although we have shared the documents with the international organizations and the UN, we could not get an adequate international response," unquote. And this is despite the fact that the UN is completely aware of the atrocities being committed by Turkish forces and by Turkey's surrogates in Afrin. It's documented by the UN Commission of Inquiry report of the Independent International Commission of Inquiry on the Syrian Arab Republic, published August 2020. It's a big title. It's linked at the Tangents playlist. The UN has no excuse not to act. They know all about it. In addition, there's been widespread Turkish-backed desecration and destruction of holy sites for a few reasons. Monetary gain, and of course, anti-Kurdish racism, and religious domination. In fact, Turkey has built mosques on sites which are in UNESCO's cultural heritage list. Earlier I said Afrin used to be one of the most beautiful places in Syria. But the natural landscape of Afrin has been ravaged since the Turkish assault starting in January 2018. Since its so-called Operation Olive Branch, around 300,000 forest and olive trees have been cut down for logging and for the coal industry in Turkey. While more than 27,000 acres of arable land has been burned, and much of the remaining agricultural produce, including the famous olives from Afrin, are now sold not in Syria, but in Turkey. This according to the Rojava Information Center. And Turkey's presence is not only political or military, it controls Afrin's culture, its economy, and its education. It has essentially Turkified northern Syria. Quoting Sinam Cherkani, the U.S. representative of the Syrian Democratic Council, which is the political wing of the autonomous administration of North and East Syria, which is the formal name that I'm using the term Rojava, which is a lot shorter, and it essentially means the same thing. Quoting from Sinan Shirkhani, she says, quote, there are now mandatory Turkish language lessons in schools. This is in Afrin, in Syria. There are now mandatory Turkish language lessons in schools and its implementation as a language of administration in the region. Our Kurdish culture is under threat of extinction, unquote. Turkish-backed mercenaries changed the names of the streets in Afrin, removing any references to the Kurdish language and culture. Shirkhani said that antique ruins in Afrin have been looted and sent to Turkey. And for several years, Shirkhani has been calling on the U.S. Congress. I mean, she's based in Washington, D.C., so right there, knocking on the doors of Congress, urging an independent organization to Afrin to investigate the crimes, but without any success. Megan Baudet is an independent researcher, one of the most knowledgeable people about what's happened in Afrin in the last 4 years. She's the founder of the Missing Afrin Women Project. You can go to missingafrinwomen.org. She provides excellent info and background information as well in an interview. The interview is linked at the Gaza Corner section of the Tangents playlist at tangents.com. Thank you, Harry. Quoting Megan Baudet, what the women of Rojava and North and East Syria have done in building a mass movement across ethnicity, across religions, across geography, in nearly one-third of Syrian territory in order to build the autonomous administration and ensure that every step of the way that women's freedom has been prioritized is, in my view, really one of the greatest political achievements of any cause of freedom of our time. Women there, meaning in Afrin, participated in institutions at a very high level and given the ultra-nationalist and religious fundamentalist attitudes that both Turkey and its affiliated armed groups have, first of all, any Kurds there were a threat, and Kurdish women who organized themselves to create the free and democratic society that they were building in Afrin were especially a threat to their very dark fundamentalist nationalist worldview. Unquote. Megan goes on to say there was a, quote, disturbing record of kidnapping women and girls for forced marriages, for abducting these women to marry members of these armed groups, which is a war crime. Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International have documented atrocities by Turkey and its surrogate forces in northern Syria. Amnesty, in a report that's linked at the Tangents playlist, concluded, quote, Turkish military forces and a coalition of Turkey-backed Syrian armed groups have displayed a shameful disregard for civilian life, carrying out serious violations and war crimes, unquote. That report was published October 2019, and the situation is no different today. I wanted to play the voice of a Syrian Kurdish child who lives, I hope he still lives, in a very symbolic Kurdish town called Kobani. It's right on the Turkish border. It's not part of the Afrin canton. It was its own canton. But it was the first place where the Islamic State was defeated. And this month, Turkey has been attacking Kobani. But you probably don't hear about it on the mainstream media. Kobani
rangină, deșeuită la șpuhină, istri ce vom divorină, ah, cu bonii. Istri ce vom divorină, ah, cu bonii. Giovanni vi ce crocirin, lehtu bun bairișkirin, Giovanni vi ce crocirin, lehtu bun bairișkirin, gulev singi wan werkirin, vizi erdu hezi şervan. Kobani rohan gine, dışı ve telaş fukhine. Kobani rohan gine, dışı ve telaş fukhine. Yestri çavan divarine, ah rujava. Yestri çavan divarine, ah rujava. Giovanni we check rockin rahtu bum bayrish kirin Giovanni we check rockin rahtu bum bayrish kirin gulev singi wan wer kirin biji erdu mosteye şervan biji erdu hezin şervan Giovanni rahem kina dışavet alaş bukhina Kobani rahem kina dışavet alaş bukhina Hestre çavan dibarina ah Kobani.
That I find very, very moving. A child in Kobani, a field recording that I have. And that, I think, is a fitting way to end Gaza Corner tonight.